This is the Tax Update Podcast for September the 29th, 2008. This week, too late to elect. The Tax Update Podcast is intended for tax professionals and is not designed for those not skilled in independent tax research. All readers and listeners expect to do their own research with their minds raised in this presentation before relying upon the positions presented. The podcast and this document may be reproduced freely so as long as no fee is charged for the use of the document or the audio file. Such prohibited use include using this podcast or document as part of a CP presentation for which a fee is charged. The podcast is sponsored by Lineberg Information Services located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on tax-related matters, as well as access to a library of useful information to tax practitioners that subscribe to their services. Visit them on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. This week, we look at another taxpayer's unsuccessful attempt to convince a court that he should be allowed to make a late mark-to-market election under Section 475F. After failing at the district court level, the taxpayer appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, who, in denying relief, went into some detail about why such lack of relief made sense in this case for this provision. The case is a Carr versus Commissioner, 2008 TNT 186-19. Of interest is the court's discussion of why the taxpayer was not eligible for the type of relief granted by the tax court in Vines versus Commissioner, 126 TC 279, under Regulation Section 301.3100-3BIII. As we've discussed before in previous podcasts, if a taxpayer is a trader in security, which is a very specific test as opposed to being an investor with the securities, the taxpayer may elect under Section 475F to use the mark-to-market method to account for the securities, marking the securities up or down to market value that are held at the end of the year. That Section 475F provides for the election and states that in the case of a person who is engaged in a trader business that is a trader in securities and who elects to have this paragraph apply to such trader business, such person shall recognize gain or loss in any security held in connection with such trader business at the close of any taxable year as if such security were sold for its fair market value on the last business day of such taxable year, and any gain or loss shall be taken into account for such taxable year. It goes on to note the proper adjustment shall be made and the amount of any gain or loss subsequently realized for gain or loss taken into account of the preceding sentence. The Secretary may provide regulations for the application of this paragraph at times other than the times provided in the subparagraph. We go on to discuss other issues, but if we get to number D, we have an interesting provision. It also says, rules similar to the rules of subsection B4 and D shall apply to securities held by a person in any trade or business with respect to an election under this paragraph is in effect. Subsection D3 shall not apply under the preceding sentence for purposes of applying Section 1402 and 7704. Why would we want to make the mark-to-market election? Well, it turns out that the provision noted above at 475F1D invokes a special treatment under Section 475D, and specifically 475D3 is of much interest. It provides that the gain or loss that we recognize in this case shall be treated as ordinary income or loss. That issue is important because, remember, if we treat it as ordinary income or loss and we're no longer subject to the capital loss limitation of $3,000 for a net capital loss each year. As such, our trader gains or losses, our trader losses could exceed $3,000 for the year, and we could even create a net operating loss would allow us to carry back that loss to prior years and recover tax paid. But the caveat is we have to agree to this mark-to-market election, and we have to agree to continue that election or continue using this method until we get permission from the commissioner to change that method of accounting to go back to the more traditional methods where we'll treat them as capital gains or losses. Now, even more good news, though, in one sense is offered up. At least you had losses. You consider losses good news. But if you have income, one thing that you will not be impacted, that you may worry about there, what I'm going to treat as ordinary income, and does that mean that my income from trading is going to be subject to self-employment tax? Well, remember that above it told us that it would not apply for purposes of Section 1402. And there is a general prohibition of Section 1402 A3 Cap A that exempts the sales of capital assets from being taxed as self-employment income. So the good news is that even if we end up making this election and it turns out that we make money and are marking up to market, our gains will not be subject to self-employment tax just because we want to be able, if our losses go in excess of $3,000, to take those losses in full in the year they are incurred. Now, the IRS has issued guidance for making this election, which is found in Revenue Procedure 9917. And it's of special interest today because of the date by which the election must be made. It notes that generally, except for as provided in Section 5.032 of this revenue procedure, which is for new taxpayers, a taxpayer who's going to make an election under 475F that is effectible for a taxable year must file a statement that satisfies the requirements of 5.04 of this revenue procedure, and it must be filed not later than the due date without regard to extension of the original federal income tax return for the taxable year immediately preceding the election year, and must be attached either to that return or, if applicable, to a request for an extension of time to file that return. Note the key issue here. If I want to elect for the year 2008 to use the mark-to-market method and I'm not a new taxpayer, I had to have filed that election by April 15th if I'm an individual taxpayer with my individual tax return as of that date, presuming I'm on the calendar year. Now, new taxpayer, if there was no federal income tax return required to be filed for tax return preceding the election year, it makes the election by placing in its books and records not later than 2 months and 15 days after the first day of the election year a statement that satisfies the paragraph 5.04 of the revenue procedure. To notify the service that the election was made, the new taxpayer must attach a copy of the statement to its original federal income tax return for the election year. And the required statement says the statement must describe the election being made, the first taxable year for which the election is effective, and the case of election under 475F, the trade or business for which the election has been made. Now, it's important to note that very early due date for the election. It's got to be made on that prior year return, and that's crucial. That's an extremely early election due date. The point of that's rather clear. The IRS doesn't want taxpayers to be able to look at what the results are for a year and then determine whether or not it makes sense to make this election. Rather, you have to declare your intentions early in the year and then let the chips fall where they may later in the year and in future years if you've elected this treatment. However, remember that we've always had the ability to get relief from late regulatory elections. As we discussed in a podcast quite a while back, Regulation 3.01.9100-3 provides for discretionary election relief by the IRS. Now, that was discussed in the podcast of September 15, 2005, that you can still find on the website at ezollers.libsyn.com, or you also can link there with www.edzollerstaxupdate.com. I've got that linked in as well. And if you go back to the September 15th podcast, you'll find a complete discussion of the late election provisions, not only the provision at 301.9100-3 that we talk about here for discretionary relief, but also the automatic relief provisions found at 301.9100-2. It's always an important place to go if we find that we have an election that has not been timely made to see if we may qualify for relief. Reminder that under 301.9100-2, that relief might be automatically granted. But the question becomes here that this does not qualify for automatic relief, so we have to look at the discretionary provisions on 301.9100-3. And in 301.9100-3, there are a number of special rules the IRS lists or special or items they'll take into consideration in deciding whether or not an election shall be allowed. One of the key ones that has a direct impact on Section 475F is a hindsight rule. That's found at Section 301.9100-3BIII, where the IRS shows a real disdain for Monday morning quarterbacking on behalf of the part of the taxpayer. And it notes that it's going to, in terms of uses hindsight in requesting relief, if specific facts have changed since the due date for making the election that make the election advantageous to a taxpayer, the IRS will not ordinarily grant relief. In such a case, the IRS will grant relief only when the taxpayer provides strong proof that the taxpayer's decision to seek relief did not involve hindsight. With this background, let's take a look at the case today. Now, in this case, the taxpayer was dealing with the fact that it turned out that he would have been better off at the end to have made the Section 475 election due to his trading losses. As the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals noted in this case, between the late 1970s and 2004, Akar worked as a financial planner while also trading securities for himself. On his 1999 tax return filed in 2000, A car claimed a deduction for $3,000 in capital losses based on losses in the amount of $954,041 incurred in trading securities. Obviously, Mr. Ricard had a significant amount of capital loss carryover after that transaction. He made no mark-to-market accounting until election, made no election for mark-to-market accounting, I should say, until February 2002, when he informed the IRS of his desire to make a Section 475 election for his securities trading beginning in the year 1999. Ricard also provided the IRS with amended returns for the 1999 and 2000 years. On his amended 1999 return, he treated his trading losses as ordinary losses on that basis, claimed a refund for a tax overpayment of $46,396. On his amended 2000 return, Ricard claimed net operating loss, the excess ordinary losses from 1999. Because Ricard eventually settled with the IRS regarding his 2000 return, only the claimed refund for the 1999 tax year is at issue here. In September 2002, the IRS conducted an audit and disputed Ricard's claim refund. The parties litigated the matter before the IRS's appeals office, which partially disallowed Ricard's claims based on the grounds that the Section 475F election was untimely under Revenue Procedure 9917 and that Ricard did not qualify for a time extension under Treasury Regulation 301.9100-3. The taxpayer made a few arguments to attempt to justify his right to claim the election that was made right after the required due date was still should be treated as valid. First, he claimed that since the initial year involved for him was 1999, the year in which this notice came out, that he just didn't have time due to the revenue procedure coming out that year to be able to timely make the election. The court note that he neither challenges the validity of Revenue Procedure 9917 nor disputes the election was untimely under it. However, he argued that he did not have a reasonable amount of time to file the election before the due date because a short time period between the issuance of Revenue Procedure 9917 in February 1999 and the due date for making the election, which of course would have been April 15th of 1999. However, this argument is without merit because Ricard testified in his deposition that he did not become aware of the provisions of Section 475 until early 2002, almost 3 years after the due date for the 1999 tax year. Accordingly, Ricard never could have made a timely election even if Revenue Procedure 9917 had been issued earlier than February 1999. In essence, the fact he was ignorant of the existence of the provision entirely meant he was not disadvantaged by the fact that he only had about 2 months to make the election when the IRS released this revenue procedure. The answer does leave open the question whether he might have been granted some leeway if he had elected within a reasonable time period after the issuance of Revenue Procedure 9917, but after April 15th. However, in that case, it's possible the IRS might have granted the request for relief under 301.9100-3 to extend the election period in any event. But since he had waited until 3 years after the required date to make the election to try and get the late election cleared, the court no longer bought the idea that the late election was caused solely by this unreasonably short period he had to react to Revenue Procedure 9917. The taxpayer indicated, though, that nevertheless he should be able to get relief under 301.9103, the relief the IRS had denied. He pointed out that the tax court had granted relief for a late Section 475F election in the case of Vines v. Commissioner 126 TC 279. And the taxpayer in this case, Mr. Ricard, felt that he should be allowed to make a similarly late election. However, the district court did not agree, and in this case, neither did the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals pointed out some unique facts in Vines. In Vines, the tax court interpreted the hindsight exception in the context of a late 475F election and concluded that the relevant inquiry is whether allowing a late election gives the taxpayer some advantage that was not available at the due date. The tax court in Vines concluded that the petitioner had not used hindsight within the meaning of Section 301.9100-3B3III because the only fact that changed after the due date for making the election was the discovery of the availability of the election itself. Petitioner conducted no trading activities and incurred no further losses between the time he could have filed the 475F election, or he should have filed it, and the date he actually filed the election. If a late election is allowed, the petitioner will not be entitled to anything more than that to which he would have been entitled had he made the timely election. And in essence, he was working only with the same, he had the same information available to him to make the election when he finally made it that he would have had he made a timely election. It was key to the decision that, in essence, he had no more information about the results of his election, that is, as it impacted the results of his treatment of trading for securities, when he made the late election than he would have had he made a timely election. As a practical matter, honestly, this would be a unique case. Most often, a taxpayer won't stop trading prior to April 15th, which is the type of facts we need to get a Vines case. As well, if this was the first year the taxpayers trading and they stopped trading as early in the year as April 15th, it may be very difficult to convince the court that the activity rose to the level of a trade or business in trading, a requirement that is going to be there in order for the taxpayer to even be able to make the 475F election to begin with. The court went on to note that the tax court had distinguished the Vine situation from that in other cases. Quoting the Ninth Circuit, the Vine court contrasted the case before it with Lehrer versus Commissioner, in which the taxpayers sought retroactively to convert their capital losses into ordinary losses several years later, with continued trading in the interim in order to escape a deficiency in a Section 6662 accuracy-related penalty. The Vines court found that the taxpayer and Lehrer's are the classic example of taxpayers who seek to use the benefit of hindsight. In a subsequent case, the tax court concluded that a taxpayer used hindsight after the under the regulation when he filed a Section 475F election years after it was due, while having continued to trade securities in the interim in order to convert capital losses to ordinary losses. They tell you to see Knish versus Commissioner, Tax Court Memorandum Decision 2006-268. Quote, a taxpayer attempted to make a mark-to-market election years after it is due, while continuing to trade in the meantime. And basically, an attempt to convert capital losses to ordinary losses is a classic example of a taxpayer seeking to use hindsight. In this case, the taxpayer clearly had more information available at the time he tried to make the election than he would have had a timely election been made. He now knew he had $90-some thousand of losses for the year. However, the taxpayer argued that the Treasury had indicated that minimizing one's tax liability was a valid reason for the service to allow a taxpayer to make a late election. The court notes that Aker-Argyar interpretation of hindsight conflicts with the preamble to the final Treasury regulations of 301.9100. In the preamble, the Secretary of the Treasury stated there are two policies that must be balanced in formulating the standards for Section 301.9100 relief. The first is the policy of promoting efficient tax administration by providing limited time periods for taxpayers to choose among alternative tax treatments and encourage prompt tax reporting. The second is the policy preventing taxpayers that are in reasonable compliance with the tax law to minimize their tax liability by collecting from them only the amount of tax they would have paid if they had been fully informed and well advised. However, the Ninth Circuit does not see any conflict, despite the fact that Mr. Akar would claim, well, he wasn't fully informed, he wasn't properly advised, and that's why he has this problem. The Ninth Circuit noted that they find no hindsight between this general standard and our specific application of the hindsight exception. The preamble states as one of its policies that a taxpayer should not pay more tax than he would have if he had been fully informed and well advised. The statement does not suggest, however, that a taxpayer should be permitted to take advantage of knowledge that he could not have had when the election was due, but that allows him several years later to elect retroactively the most advantageous accounting method. Finally, the fact that the election might prove less than optimal in the future, since remember, IRS permission is needed to change the method back to the other method after we've elected, did not mean hindsight was not used currently. To quote the court, Akar also argues that he could not have used hindsight in filing the election in February 2002 because any advantage that the election would give him as to earlier years would be outweighed by the possibility that in subsequent years he would make trading gains, apparently over 90-some thousand, not losses, and that therefore the election would become disadvantageous. This argument is without merit. Whether a taxpayer might come to regret his decisions in later years does not affect whether the taxpayer uses hindsight at the time he makes a retroactive election. A taxpayer who makes an election several years after continuing to trade in the interim still has some advantage that was not available on the due date, even if in subsequent years the election becomes disadvantageous. In any event, the court notes, a taxpayer may revoke the election with the consent of the Secretary of Treasury. I would note that it's not very likely the Secretary is going to approve, most likely, in that case, but nevertheless, the possibility is there, you can always ask. What are our conclusions and lessons from this case? Well, again, we're reminded it is very difficult to make a late Section 475F election. If you have taxpayers that are into trading securities, and unfortunately, the problem often becomes we only discover this fact when they come in the next year to have the returns done. But if you have a taxpayer who mentions they're going to go into trading securities, you need to discuss with them the possibility of the Section 475F election just in case things don't work out well for them and they have losses. As well, given the volatility in the stock markets today, it is very possible that somebody that got into day trading recently might have incurred significant losses if they weren't very good at their day trading and managed to keep sell the downswings recently in the market and miss out on the upswings, something that I've found many of my clients who go into day trading discover they have the perfect ability to catch everything going down. They just can't make any money doing it. It's also important, though, to remember that the court told us and mentioned to us the Vines case where we could clear the hurdle about the fact there was not retroactive or hindsight used in making the election, and that while it may be difficult to get a late 475F election, if the right facts existed, it is possible to have a late 475F election approved, or at least approved by the court, even if the IRS is extremely unlikely itself to approve such an item. But the problem becomes showing no hindsight was used. Finally, even if you're not at all interested in Section 475F, the discussion here about the application of the term hindsight and what items would count as viewing the transaction in hindsight is useful for those of us who run into a situation where we find an election has not been made timely, where that election is not allowed to be made automatically on a late basis under Section 301.9100-2, but nevertheless we're going to have to ask the IRS for their permission to make the late election. In that case, we should consider the issue of what constitutes hindsight and what does not constitute hindsight, and consider that matter when advising our clients on whether or not there's a decent chance we may be able to go for and obtain such late election relief. This has been the tax update for September the 29th, 2008. This week I'm going to be in Minneapolis, actually in Bloomington, I should say, Minnesota, lecturing on advanced partnership issues on Tuesday, September the 30th. You may be hearing this before I go down there. If you're going to be there, I look forward to seeing you. Otherwise, I come back to Phoenix after that. Will not be going back on the road until we get to October 16th when I go to Casper, Wyoming for current federal tax developments. Then the trip I've mentioned before going through California starting in Sacramento on the Monday following the 16th, which would be the 18th, 19th, I believe that's the 19th of October, is the start of that week, is the 16th, well, or 17th, let's say, is Friday. I'll get my dates right here. The 20th of that week, I begin in Sacramento, 20th and 21st. The 22nd, I will be in San Francisco. The 23rd, I will be near Los Angeles International Airport lecturing, and the 24th, close out the week in Pasadena. The courses I'll teach there are going to be advanced partnership like we had in Minnesota, as well as the course for S corporation structures, and I'll be swapping between the two courses in the various locations. I basically have 2 days in San Francisco, 2 days in Sacramento, 2 days in Southern California. We do both courses essentially in those two locations. San Francisco will be the partnership course only because that's the odd day out in the mix. But if you're thinking of coming, I look forward to seeing you there. You can register for that course on the California Society's website in the Education Foundation links and search for the courses. If you search for my name, you should find it. Again, the tax update is brought to you by Lineberg Information Services, located on the web at www.lineberg-services.com. Lineberg Information Services offers email newsletters on matters of interest to tax practitioners, and you should consider subscribing to those newsletters. Go to www.lineberg-services.com. This has been the Tax Update.